Most of them are anything but mistakes. He ran his hands through his hair. Please, just a little more time.
I don't have any to give you. I need more than names, Archer.
What about the Crown Prince and the Captain of the Guard? Perhaps they have the information you need. You're close with both of them, aren't you? She bared her teeth at him.
What do you know about them?
Archer gave her a steady, calculating look.
You think I didn't recognize the Captain of the Guard the day you just happened to run into me outside of the Willows?
His attention flicked to her side, where her hand currently rested on a dagger.
Have you told them about your plan to keep me alive?
No,
she said,
her grip on the dagger relaxing.
No, I haven't. I don't want to involve them.
Or is it because you don't actually trust either of them?
She shot to her feet. Don't presume to know anything about me, Archer. She stalked to the door and flung it open. The butler was nowhere to be seen. She looked over her shoulder at Archer, whose eyes were wide as he watched her.
You have until the end of the week. 6 days to get me more information. If you don't give me anything by then, my next visit won't be nearly as pleasant.
Not giving him the time to reply, she stormed out of the room, grabbed her cloak from the front closet, and strode back out onto the icy city streets. The maps and figures in front of Dorian had to be wrong. Someone had to be playing a joke, because there was no way Calicala had this many slaves. Seated at the long table in his father's council chamber, Dorian glanced at the men around him. None looked surprised. None looked upset. Councilman Mullison, who had taken a special interest in Calicala, was practically beaming. He should have fought to get Nehemia into this council meeting, but there was probably nothing she could say right now that would have any impact on a decision that had clearly already been made. His father was smiling faintly at Roland, his head propped on a fist. The black ring on the king's hand glinted in the dim light from the beastly fireplace, that mouth-shaped hearth that seemed poised to devour the room. From his spot beside Parrington, Roland gestured to the map. Another black ring glinted on Roland's hand, the same as the one Parrington wore, too.
As you can see, Calicala can't support the current number of slaves. There are too many to even fit in the mines as it is, and though we have them digging for new deposits, the work has been stagnant.
Roland smiled.
But, slightly to the north, right along the southern edge of Oakwald, our men have discovered an iron deposit that seems to cover a large area. It's close enough to Calicala that we could erect a few new buildings to house additional guards and overseers, bring in even more slaves if we want, and start work on it right away.
Impressed murmurs and a nod from his father to Roland made Dorian's jaw clench. Three matching rings. Three black rings to signify... what? That they were bound in some way to each other? How had Roland gotten past his father's and Parrington's defenses so quickly? Because of his support of a place like Calicala? Nehemia's words from the night before kept ringing in his head. He'd seen the scars on Selena's back up close, a brutal mess of flesh that made him sick with rage to look at. How many like her were rotting away in these labor camps?
And where will the slaves sleep?
Dorian suddenly asked.
Will you build shelter for them, too?
Everyone, including his father, turned to look at him, but Roland just shrugged.
They're slaves. Why shelter them when they can sleep in the mines? Then we wouldn't waste time bringing them in and out every day.
More murmurs and nods. Dorian stared at Roland.
If we have a surplus of slaves, then why not let some of them go? Surely they're not all rebels and criminals.
A growl from down the table. His father.
Watch your tongue, Prince.
Not a father to his son, but a king to his heir. Still, that icy rage was growing, and he kept seeing Selena's scars, her too thin body the day they'd pulled her out of Endovier, her gaunt face, and the hope and desperation mingling in her eyes. He heard Nehemia's words.
What she went through is a blessing compared to what most endure.
Dorian peered down the table at his father, whose face was dark with irritation.
Is this the plan?
Now that we've conquered the continent, you'll throw everyone into Calicula or Endovier, until there's no one left in the kingdoms but people from Otterlin?
Silence. The rage dragged him down to the place where he'd felt that flicker of ancient power when Nehemia had touched his heart.
You keep tightening the leash, and it's going to snap, Dorian said to his father, then looked across the table to Roland and Mullison. How about you spend a year in Calicula? And when you're done, you two can sit here and tell me about your plans for expansion.
His father slammed his hands on the table, rattling the glasses and pitchers.
You will mind your mouth, Prince, or you will be thrown out of this room before the vote.
Dorian shot out of his seat. Nehemia had been right. He hadn't looked at the others in Endovier. He hadn't let himself.
I've heard enough, he snarled at his father, at Roland and Mullison, at Parrington, and at all the lords and men in the room. You want my vote? Then here it is. No, not in 1,000 years.
His father growled, but Dorian was already walking across the red marble floor, past that horrible fireplace, out the doors, and into the bright halls of the glass castle. He didn't know where he was going, only that he felt freezing cold, a cold that fueled the calm, glittering rage. He took flight after flight of stairs down into the stone castle, then long hallways and narrow staircases, until he found a forgotten hall where there were no eyes to see him, as he drew back his fist and punched the wall. The stone cracked under his hand. Not a small crack, but a spiderweb that kept growing and growing toward the window on the right until the window exploded, glass showering everywhere as Dorian dropped into a crouch and covered his head. Air rushed in, so cold his eyes blurred, but he just knelt there, fingers in his hair, breathing, breathing, breathing as the anger ebbed out of him. It wasn't possible. Maybe he'd just hit the wall in the wrong spot and the damn thing was so ancient that it had only been waiting for something like this to happen. He'd never heard of stone cracking that way, spreading out like a living thing. And then the window. Heart racing, Dorian lowered his hands from his head and looked at them. There wasn't a bruise or a cut, or even a trace of pain. But he'd hit that wall as hard as he could. He could have, should have, broken his hand. Yet his knuckles were unharmed, only white from gripping his fingers in a tight fist. On trembling legs, Dorian rose and surveyed the damage. The wall had splintered but remained intact. The ancient window, however, had shattered completely. And around him, around where he had crouched, a perfect circle, clean of debris, as if the glass and wood had showered everything but him. It wasn't possible, because magic. Magic. Dorian dropped to his knees and was violently sick. Curled on the couch beside Kaol, Selena took a sip of her tea and frowned. Can't you hire a servant like Philippa so we can have someone bring us treats? Kaol raised an eyebrow.
Don't you ever stay in your own rooms anymore?
No, not if she could help it. Not with Elena and Mort and all that nonsense just a secret door away. Ordinarily, she might have sought sanctuary in the library, but not now. Not when the library held so many secrets it made her head spin to think about them. For a moment, she wondered if Nehemia had discovered anything about the riddle in Davis's office. She'd have to ask her tomorrow. She kicked Kaol in the ribs with a sock-covered foot. All I'm saying is that I'd like some chocolate cake every now and then. He closed his eyes.
And an apple tart, and a loaf of bread, and a pot of stew, and a mountain of cookies, and a...
He chuckled as she put her foot against his face and pushed. He grabbed her foot and wouldn't let go when she tried yanking her leg back.
It's true, and you know it, Lena.
So what if it is? Haven't I earned the right to eat as much as I want whenever I want? She wrenched her foot out of his grasp as the smile faded from his face.
Yes,
he said quietly, his voice barely audible over the crackling fire.
You have.
After a few moments of silence, he stood up and walked to the door. She sat up on her elbows. Where are you going? He opened the door.
to get you chocolate cake.
When he returned, and after they'd both eaten half of the cake he'd swiped from the kitchens, Selena lay back on the couch, a hand on her full belly. Kaol was already sprawled across the cushions, sleeping soundly. Staying up until the middle of the night at the ball, then awakening for their sunrise run this morning, had been exhausting. Why hadn't he just canceled the run?
You know, the courts weren't always like this, Nehemia had said. There was a time when people valued honor and loyalty, when serving a ruler wasn't about obedience and fear. Do you think another court like that could ever rise again?
Selena hadn't given Nehemia an answer. She hadn't wanted to talk about it. But looking at Kaol now, at the man he was, and the man he was still becoming...
Yes, she thought. Yes, Nehemia, it could rise again, if we could find more men like him.
But not in a world with this king, she realized. He'd crush a court like that before Nehemia could muster one. If the king were gone, then the court that Nehemia dreamed of could change the world. That court could undo the damage of a decade of brutality and terror. It could restore the lands ravaged by conquest, and renew the hearts of the kingdoms that shattered when Otterlin marched in.
And in that world... Selena swallowed hard.
She and Kaol would never be a normal boy and girl, but perhaps in that world they could make a life of their own. She wanted that life, because even though he'd pretended nothing had happened after the dance they'd shared last night, something had. And maybe it had taken her this long to realize it, but this man... She wanted that life with him. The world Nehemia dreamed about, and the world Selena sometimes dared let herself consider... was nothing more than a shred of hope and a memory of what the kingdoms had once been. But perhaps the rebel movement truly knew about the king's plans and how to ruin them, how to destroy them, with or without Elaine Galathinius and whatever army they claimed she was raising. Selena sighed and eased off the couch, gently shifting Kaol's leg so she didn't disturb him. She turned back, though, just once, leaning down to brush her fingers through his short hair, then grazed them along his cheek. Then she quietly slipped from his room, taking the remnants of the chocolate cake with her. She was wondering whether eating the rest of the chocolate cake would make her severely sick when she turned down her hallway and spotted Dorian sitting on the floor outside her rooms. He looked over when he saw her, his eyes going to the cake in her hands. Selena blushed and lifted her chin. They hadn't spoken since their argument over Roland. Perhaps he'd come to apologize. Served him right. But as she neared and Dorian got to his feet, she took one look at the expression in his sapphire eyes and knew he wasn't here for an apology.
"It's a bit late for a visit," she said by way of greeting.
Dorian put his hands in his pockets and leaned against the wall. His face was pale, his eyes haunted, but he gave her half a smile. "It's a bit late for chocolate cake, too." "Been raiding the kitchens?" She remained outside her rooms, running an eye over him. He looked fine, no bruises, no signs of injury. Yet something was off.
"What are you doing here?"
He avoided her gaze. "I was looking for Nehemia, but her servant said she was out. I thought they meant here. Then I thought you two might be out for a stroll."
"I haven't seen her since this morning. Is there something you want from her?"
Dorian took a ragged breath, and Selena suddenly realized just how cold it was in the hallway. How long had he been sitting here on the freezing floor? "No," he said, shaking his head as if convincing himself of something. "No, there isn't." He began walking away. She started speaking before she knew she'd opened her mouth. "Dorian, what's wrong?"
He turned.
For a heartbeat, there was something in his eyes that reminded her of a world long since burned, a glimmer of color and power that still stalked the edges of her nightmares. But he blinked, and it was gone.
"Nothing. There's nothing wrong at all."
He strode away, hands still in his pockets. "Enjoy your cake," he said over his shoulder, and then was gone. Chapter 19.
Kaol stood before the king's throne, almost boring himself to tears as he gave yesterday's report. He tried not to think about last night, how the brief touch of Selena's fingers through his hair and on his face had sent a pang of desire through him so strong he'd wanted to grab her and pin her on the couch. It had taken all of his self-control to keep his breathing steady, to keep pretending that he was asleep. After she'd left, his heart had been pounding so hard it took him an hour to calm enough to actually sleep. Looking at the king now, Kaol was glad he'd controlled himself. The line between him and Selena was there for a reason. Crossing it would call into question his loyalty to the king before him, not to mention the way it would impact his friendship with Dorian. The prince had made himself scarce this past week. Kaol would have to make a point today to go see him. Dorian and the king were where his loyalty lay. Without his loyalty, he was no one. Without it, he'd given up his family, his title, for nothing. Kaol finished explaining his security plans for the carnival that would arrive today, and the king nodded.
Very well, Captain. Make sure your men watch the castle grounds, too. I know what sort of filth likes to travel with these carnivals, and I don't want them wandering around.
Kaol bowed his head. Consider it done. Normally, the king would dismiss him with a grunt and a wave. But today, the man merely studied him, an elbow propped on the arm of his glass throne. After a moment of silence, during which Kaol wondered if a castle spy had somehow been looking through the keyhole when Selena touched him, the king spoke.
Princess Nehemia needs to be watched.
Of all the things the king could have said, this was not what Kaol had expected. But he kept his face blank and did not question the words that implied so much.
Her influence is starting to be felt in these halls, and I am beginning to wonder if perhaps the time has come to remove her back to Ilway. I know that we already have some men watching her, but I also received word that there was an anonymous threat on her life.
Questions roared through him, along with a rising sense of dread. Who had threatened her? What had Nehemia said or done to warrant the threat? Kaol stiffened.
I haven't heard anything about that.
The king smiled.
No one has. Not even the princess herself. It seems she's made some enemies outside the palace as well.
I'll have extra guards watch her rooms and patrol her wing of the castle. I'll alert her immediately of...
There is no need to alert her. Or anyone.
The king gave him a pointed look.
She might try to use the fact that someone wants her dead as a bargaining chip. Might try to make herself into a martyr of sorts. So tell your men to stay quiet.
He didn't think Nehemia would do that, but Kaol kept his mouth shut. He'd tell his men to be discreet. And he wouldn't tell the princess, or Selena. Just because he was friendly with Nehemia, just because she was Selena's friend, it didn't change anything. While he knew that Selena would be furious that he didn't tell her, he was the captain of the guard. He had fought and sacrificed nearly as much as Selena had to get to this position. He'd let her get too close by asking her to dance. He'd let himself get too close.
Captain?
Kaol blinked, then bowed low.
You have my word, Your Majesty.
Dorian panted, swinging the sword through the air in a precise parry that sent the guard scrambling. His third match, and his third opponent about to go down. He hadn't slept last night, nor had he been able to sit still this morning. So he'd come to the barracks, hoping to have someone wear him down enough for exhaustion to take over. He parried and deflected the guard's assault. It had to be a mistake. Maybe he'd dreamed it all up. Maybe it had just been a combination of the right elements at the wrong time. Magic was gone, and there was no reason that he should have that power, when not even his father had been gifted with magic. Magic had been dormant in the Havilyard bloodline for generations. Dorian got past the guard's defense in an easy maneuver, though when the young man raised his hands in defeat, the prince had to wonder if he'd let him win. The thought sent a growl rippling through him. He was about to demand another match when someone sauntered over to them.
Mind if I join?
Dorian stared at Roland, whose rapier looked like it had hardly ever been used. The guard took one look at Dorian's face,
bowed, and found someplace else to be. Dorian watched his cousin, the black ring on Roland's finger.
"I don't think you want to dance with me today, cousin."
"Ah," Roland said, frowning. "About yesterday. I'm sorry for that. Had I known the labor camps were such a sensitive matter for you, I never would have broached the subject or worked with Counselor Mollison. I called off the vote after you left. Mollison was furious."
Dorian raised his brows.
"Oh?" Roland shrugged. "You were right. I don't know anything about what it's like in those camps. I only took up the cause because Parrington suggested that I work with Mollison, who stood to gain a lot from the expansion because of his ties to the iron industry."
"And I'm supposed to believe you?"
Roland gave him a winning smile. "We are family, after all."
Family. Dorian had never really considered himself to be in an actual family, and certainly not now. If anyone found out about what had happened in that hallway yesterday, about the magic he might have, his father would kill him. He had a second son, after all. Families weren't exactly supposed to think like that, were they? Dorian had gone looking for Nehemia last night out of desperation. But in the light of morning, he was grateful he hadn't seen her. If the princess had that sort of information about him, she could use it to her advantage, blackmail him all she wanted. And Roland... Dorian began walking away.
"Why don't you save your maneuvering for someone who cares?"
Roland kept pace beside him. "Ah, but who else is more worthy than my own cousin? What greater challenge than winning you over to my schemes?"
Dorian shot him a warning glare and found the young man grinning.
"If only you'd seen the chaos that erupted after you left," Roland went on. "As long as I live, I'll never forget the look on your father's face when you growled at them all."
Roland laughed, and despite himself, Dorian found a smile tugging on his lips.
"I thought the old bastard would combust right there."
Dorian shook his head.
"He's hanged men for calling him such names, you know."
"Yes, but when you're as handsome as I am, dear cousin, you'd be surprised by how much more you can get away with."
Dorian rolled his eyes, but considered his cousin for a few moments. Roland might be close with Parrington and his father, but perhaps he'd just been pulled into Parrington's schemes and needed someone to steer him right. And if his father and the other councilmen thought that they could use Roland to win support for their dark dealings, well, then it was time for Dorian to play the game, too. He could turn his father's pawn against him. Between the two of them, surely they could sway enough of the council to oppose more unsavory proposals.
"You really called off the vote?"
Roland waved a hand. "I think you're right that we're pushing our luck with the other kingdoms. If we want to keep control, we need to find a balance. Shoving them into slavery won't help. It might just turn more people toward rebellion."
Dorian nodded slowly and paused.
"I have somewhere to be," he lied, sheathing his sword. "But perhaps I'll see you in the hall for dinner."
Roland gave him an easy smile.
"I'll try to muster up a few lovely ladies to keep us company."
Dorian waited until Roland was around the corner before heading outside, where the chaos of the courtyard sucked him up. The carnival his mother had commissioned for Holland, her belated Yulmas present to him, had finally arrived. It was not a massive carnival. Only a few black tents, a dozen cage wagons, and 5 covered wagons had been set up in the open courtyard. The whole thing felt rather somber, despite the fiddler sawing away, and the merry shouts of the workers scrambling to finish setting up the tents in time to surprise Holland that evening. People hardly looked Dorian's way as he meandered through the throng. Then again, he was dressed in sweaty old clothes and had his cloak wrapped tightly around him. Only the guards, highly trained and aware of everything, noticed him. But they understood his need for anonymity without being told. A stunningly beautiful woman walked out of one of the tents, blonde, slender, tall, and dressed in fine riding clothes. A mountain-sized man also emerged, carrying long poles of iron that Dorian doubted most men could even lift.
Dorian passed by one of the large covered wagons, pausing at the words written in white paint on its side. The Carnival of Mirrors. See illusions and reality collide. He frowned. Had his mother even put a moment's consideration into the gift, into how it might appear, the message it would send? Carnivals, with their illusions and tricks, always pushed the limit of outright treason. Dorian snorted. Perhaps he belonged in one of these cages. A hand landed on his shoulder, and Dorian whirled to find Kaol smiling at him.
I thought I'd find you here.
He wasn't surprised in the least that Kaol had recognized him. Dorian was about to smile back when he noticed who was with the captain. Selena was standing at one of the covered cages, listening through the black velvet curtains to whatever was inside.
What are you two doing here so early? The unveiling's not until nightfall.
Nearby, the gargantuan man began hammering foot-long spikes into the frozen earth.
She wanted a walk, and
Kaol suddenly gave a violent curse. Dorian didn't particularly want to, but he followed after Kaol as he stalked to Selena and yanked her arm away from the black curtain.
You'll lose your hand like that, the captain warned her, and she glared at him.
Then she gave Dorian a close-lipped smile that felt more like a wince. He hadn't lied to her last night about wanting to see Nehemia, but he'd also found himself wanting to see her, until she appeared with that ridiculous half-eaten cake, which she clearly had plans to devour in private. He couldn't begin to imagine how she'd look at him if she found out he might, he kept telling himself, have some trace of magic within him. Nearby, the beautiful blonde woman perched on a stool and began playing the lute. He knew that the men, and guards, starting to flock to her weren't just there for the lovely music. Kaol shifted on his feet, and Dorian realized that they'd been standing there silently, not saying anything. Selena crossed her arms.
Did you find Nehemia last night?
He had a feeling she already knew the answer, but he said, No, I went back to my room after I saw you. Kaol looked at Selena, who merely shrugged. What did that mean?
So, Selena said, surveying the carnival, do we really have to wait for your brother before we can see what's inside all these cages? Looks like the performers are already starting.
And they were. All sorts of jugglers and sword swallowers and fire breathers milled about, while tumblers balanced on impossible things, chair backs, poles, a bed of nails.
I think this is just practice, Dorian said, and he hoped he was right, because if Holland learned that anyone had started without his approval,
Dorian would make sure he was far away from the castle when that tantrum occurred.
Hmm, Selena said, and walked deeper into the teeming carnival. Kaol was watching the prince warily.
There were questions in Kaol's eyes, questions that Dorian had no intention of answering. So he strode after Selena, because leaving the carnival would feel too much like drawing a line. They made their way to the last and largest wagon, in the rough semicircle of tents and cages.
"Welcome, welcome!" shouted an old woman, bent and gnarled with age, from a podium at the foot of its stairs. A crown of stars adorned her silver hair, and though her tanned face was saggy and speckled, there was a spark in her brown eyes.
"Look into my mirrors and see the future. Let me examine your palm so I might tell you myself."
The old woman pointed with a knotted cane at Selena.
"Care to have your fortune told, girl?"
Dorian blinked, then blinked again at the sight of the woman's teeth. They were razor sharp, like a fish's, and made of metal. Of iron. Selena pulled her green cloak tightly around her, but remained staring at the crone. Dorian had heard the legends of the fallen witch kingdom, where bloodthirsty witches had overthrown the peaceful Kraken dynasty and then ripped apart the kingdom stone by stone. 500 years later, songs were still sung of the deadly wars that had left the Iron Teeth clans the only ones standing on a killing field, dead Kraken queens all around them. But the last Kraken queen had cast a spell to ensure that as long as Iron Teeth banners flew, no bit of soil would yield life to them.
"Come into my wagon, dear heart," the old woman crooned at Selena, and let old Baba Yellowlegs take a look into your future."
Sure enough, peeking out from beneath her brown robe were saffron-colored ankles. Selena's face had drained of color, and Kaol went to her side and took her elbow. Despite the way the protective gesture made Dorian's gut twist, he was glad Kaol had done it. But this was all just a sham. That woman had probably put on a fake set of iron teeth and sheer yellow stockings, and called herself Baba Yellowlegs to make carnival patrons hand over good coin.
"You're a witch," Selena said, her voice strangled.
She didn't think it was a sham, apparently. No, her face was still white as death. Gods, was she actually scared? Baba Yellowlegs laughed, a crow's cackle, and bowed.
"The last-born witch in the Witch Kingdom."
To Dorian's shock, Selena took a step back, closer to Kaol now, a hand going to the necklace she always wore.
"Care to have your fortune read now?"
"No,"
Selena said, almost leaning into Kaol.
"Then get out of my way and let me go about my business. I've never seen such a cheap crowd."
Baba Yellowlegs snarled and lifted her head to look over them.
"Fortunes! Fortunes!"
Kaol took a step toward her, a hand on his sword.
"Don't be so rude to your customers."
The crone smiled, her teeth glinting in the afternoon light as she sniffed at him.
"And what would a man who smells of the Silver Lake do to an innocent old witch like me?"
A chill went down Dorian's spine, and it was Selena's turn to grab onto Kaol's arm as she tried to pull him away, but Kaol refused to move.
"I don't know what sort of sham you're running, old woman, but you'd best mind your tongue before you lose it."
Baba Yellowlegs licked her razor-sharp teeth.
"Come and get it," she purred.
Challenge flashed in Kaol's eyes, but Selena was still so pale that Dorian took her by the arm, leading her away.
"Let's go,"
he said, and the old woman shifted her eyes to him. If she could indeed tell things about them, then the last place he wanted to be was here.
"Kaol, let's go."
The witch was grinning at him as she used a long metallic nail to pick out something from her teeth.
"Hide from fate all you like," Baba Yellowlegs said as they turned away. "But it shall soon find you."
"You're shaking."
"No, I'm not,"
Selena hissed, batting Kaol's hand from her arm. It was bad enough that Dorian was there, but for Kaol to witness her coming face to face with Baba Yellowlegs. She knew the stories, legends that had given her brutal nightmares as a child, a first-hand account that a former friend had once told her. Given how that friend had foully betrayed and nearly killed her, Selena had hoped that the horrific stories about the Iron Teeth witches were just more lies. But seeing that woman... Selena swallowed hard. Seeing that woman, feeling the sense of otherness that radiated from her. Selena had no trouble believing that these witches were capable of consuming a human child until nothing but clean-picked bones remained. Frozen down to her core now, she followed Dorian as he strode away from the carnival. While she'd been standing in front of that wagon, all she'd wanted, for some reason, was to get inside it, like there was something waiting for her within. And that crown of stars the witch had been wearing. And then her amulet had started feeling heavy and warm, the way it had the night she'd seen that person in the hall. If she ever came back to the carnival, she would bring Nehemia with her, just to see if Yellowlegs was indeed what she claimed to be. She didn't give a damn about what was in the cages. Not anymore. Not with Yellowlegs to hold her interest. She followed Dorian and Kaol without hearing a single word they said, until they had somehow arrived at the royal stables, and Dorian was leading them inside.
"I was going to give it to you on your birthday," he said to Kaol. "But why wait another 2 days?"
Kaol exclaimed.
Dorian stopped before a stall.
"Are you out of your mind?"
Dorian grinned, an expression she hadn't seen in so long that it made her remember late nights spent tangled up with him, the warmth of his breath on her skin.
"What? You deserve it."
A night-black Asterian stallion stood within the pen, staring at them with ancient dark eyes. Kaol was backing away, hands raised.
This is a gift for a prince, not...
Dorian clicked his tongue.
Nonsense! I'll be offended if you don't accept. I can't.
Kaol shifted pleading eyes to Selena, but she shrugged. I had an Asterion mare once, she admitted, and both of them blinked. Selena went up to the stall and held out her fingers, letting the stallion sniff her. Her name was Cassida. She smiled at the memory, stroking the stallion's velvet-soft nose. It meant drinker of the wind in the dialect of the Red Desert. She looked like a storm-tossed sea.
How did you get an Asterion mare? They're worth even more than the stallions, Dorian said. It was the first normal-sounding question he'd asked her in weeks.
She looked over her shoulder at them and flashed a fiendish grin. I stole her from the Lord of Xandria.
Kaol's eyes grew wide, and Dorian cocked his head. It was so comical that she started laughing.
I swear on the word it's the truth. I'll tell you the story some other time.
She backed away, nudging Kaol toward the pen.
The horse huffed at his fingers, and beast and man looked at each other. Dorian was still watching her with narrowed brows, but when she caught him staring, he turned to Kaol.
Is it too early to ask what you'll be doing for your birthday?
Selena crossed her arms.
We have plans, she said before Kaol could reply. She didn't mean to sound so sharp, but, well, she'd been planning the night for a few weeks now.
Kaol looked at her over a shoulder.
We do?
Selena gave him a venomously sweet smile. Oh, yes. It might not be an Asterion stallion, but... Dorian's eyes flashed.
Well, I hope you have fun, he interrupted.
Kaol quickly looked back at the horse as Selena and Dorian faced each other. Whatever familiar expressions he'd once worn were now gone, and part of her, the part that had spent so many nights looking forward to seeing that handsome face, truly mourned it. Looking at him became difficult. She left them in the stables with a brief goodnight, congratulating Kaol on his new gift. She didn't dare turn in the direction of the carnival, where the sound of the crowd suggested that Holland had made his appearance and unveiled the cages. Instead, she sprinted up the stairs to the warmth of her rooms, trying to shut out the image of the witch's iron teeth and the way she'd called after them with those words about fate, so similar to what Mort had said on the night of the eclipse. Perhaps it was intuition, or perhaps it was because she was a miserable person who couldn't even trust the advice of a friend, but she wanted to go back to the tomb, alone. Maybe Nehemia was wrong about the amulet being irrelevant, and she was tired of waiting for her friend to find the time to research the eye riddle. She'd go back just once and never tell Nehemia, because the hole in the wall was shaped like an eye, its iris removed to form a space that would perfectly fit the amulet she wore around her neck.
Chapter 20 Mort, Selena said, and the skull knocker opened an eye.
It's terribly rude to wake someone when they're sleeping, he said drowsily.
Would you have preferred it if I had knocked on your face?
He glared at her.
I need to know something.
She held out the amulet.
This necklace, does it truly have power?
Of course it does.
But it's thousands of years old.
So? Mort yawned. It's magic. Magical things rarely age as normal objects do.
But what does it do?
It protects you, as Elena said. It guards you from harm, though you certainly seem to do your best to get into trouble.
Selena opened the door. I think I know what it does. Perhaps it was mere coincidence, but the riddle had been worded so specifically.
Perhaps Davis had been looking for the same thing Elena wanted her to find. The source of the king's power.
This could be the first step toward uncovering that.
You're probably wrong, Mort said as she walked by. I'm just warning you.
She didn't listen. She went right up to the hollow eye in the wall and stood on tiptoe to look through. The wall on the other side was still blank. Unfastening her necklace, Selena carefully lifted the amulet to the eye, and it fit. Sort of. Her breath caught in her throat, and Selena leaned up against the hole, peering through the delicate gold bands. Nothing. No change on the wall or on the giant word mark. She turned the necklace upside down, but it was the same. She tried it on either side, backward, angled, but nothing. Just the same blank stone wall, illuminated by a shaft of moonlight from some vent above. She pushed against the stone, feeling for any door, any movable panel. But it's the eye of Elena. It is only with the eye that one can see rightly. What other eye is there?
You could rip out your own and see if it fits, Mort sang from the doorway.
Why won't it work? Do I need to say a spell? She glanced at the sarcophagus of the queen. Perhaps the spell would be triggered by ancient words. Words hiding right under her nose. Wasn't that always how these things happened? She refitted the amulet into the stone. Ah, she called into the night air, reciting the words engraved at Elena's feet. Time's rift. Nothing happened. Mort cackled. She snatched the amulet out of the wall. Oh, I hate this. I hate this stupid tomb, and I hate these stupid riddles and mysteries. Fine. Fine, Nehemia was right that the amulet was a dead end, and she was a wretched, horrible friend for being so distrustful and impatient. I told you it wouldn't work. Then what will work? That riddle does reference something in this tomb, behind that wall, doesn't it?
Yes, it does, but you still haven't asked the proper question.
I've asked you dozens of questions, and you won't give me any answers.
Come back another, he started. But Selena had already stalked up the stairs.
Selena stood on the barren edge of a ravine, a chill northern wind ruffling her hair. She'd had this dream before, always this setting, always this night of the year. Behind her sloped a rocky, wasted plain, and before her stretched a chasm so long it disappeared into the starlit horizon. Across the ravine was a lush, dark wood, rustling with life. And on the grassy lip of the other side stood the white stag, watching her with ancient eyes. His massive antlers glowed in the moonlight, wreathing him in ivory glory, just as she remembered. It had been on a chill night like this that she'd spotted him through the bars of her prison wagon on the way to Endovier, a glimmer of a world before it was burned to ash. They watched each other in silence. She took a half step closer to the edge, but paused as loose pebbles trickled free, tumbling into the ravine. There was no end to the darkness in that ravine. No end and no beginning either. It seemed to breathe, pulsing with whispers of faded memories, forgotten faces. Sometimes it felt as though the darkness stared back at her, and the face it wore was her own. Beneath the dark, she could have sworn she heard the rushing of a half-frozen river, swollen with melting snow off the staghorns. A flash of white, the thud of hooves on soft earth, and Selena looked up from the ravine. The stag had come closer, his head now angled, as if inviting her to join him. But the ravine only seemed to grow wider, like the maw of a giant beast opening to devour the world. So Selena did not cross, and the stag turned away, his steps near silent as he disappeared between the tangled trees of the ageless wood. Selena awoke to darkness. The fire was nothing but cinders, and the moon had set. She studied the ceiling, the faint shadows cast by the city lights in the distance. It was always the same dream, always this one night. As if she could ever forget the day when everything she had loved had been wrenched from her, and she'd awoken covered in blood that was not her own. She got out of bed, Fleetfoot leaping down beside her. She walked a few steps, then paused in the center of the room, staring into the dark, into the endless ravine still beckoning to her. Fleetfoot nuzzled her bare legs, and Selena reached down to stroke the hound's head. They remained there for a moment, gazing into that blackness without end. Selena left the castle long before dawn broke. When Selena didn't meet Kael at the barrack store that dawn,
He gave her 10 minutes before stalking up to her rooms. Just because she didn't feel like going out in the cold wasn't an excuse to be lax with her training. Not to mention, he was particularly interested in hearing the story about how she'd stolen an Asterian mare from the Lord of Xandria. He smiled at the thought, shaking his head. Only Selena would have the nerve to do something like that. His smile faded when he reached her chambers and found Nehemia sitting at the small table in the foyer, a cup of steaming tea before her. There were some books piled in front of the princess, and she looked up from one of them as he entered. Kaol bowed. The princess just said, "She is not here." Selena's bedroom door was open wide enough to reveal that the bed was empty and already made. "Where is she?" Nehemia's eyes softened, and she picked up a note that was lying among the books. "She has taken today off," she said, reading from the note before setting it down. "If I were to guess, I'd say that she is as far away from the city as she can get in half a day's ride."
"Why?"
Nehemia smiled sadly. "Because today is the 10th anniversary of her parents' death." Chapter 21 Kaol's breath caught. He remembered her screaming at the duel with Kane, when Kane had taunted her about the brutal murder of her parents, when she'd awoken covered in their blood. She'd never told him anything else, and he hadn't dared ask. He knew she'd been young, but he hadn't realized she'd been only 8. 8. 10 years ago, Terrasen had been in upheaval, and anyone who had defied Otterland's invading forces had been slaughtered. Entire families had been dragged out of their homes and murdered. His stomach clenched. What horrors had she witnessed that day? Kaol ran a hand over his face.
"She told you about her parents and her note?"
Maybe it held a shred more information, anything for him to better understand what sort of woman he'd be facing when she returned, what sort of memories he'd have to contend with. "No," Nehemia said. "She didn't tell me, but I know." She watched him with a calculated stillness, a switch to the defensive that he recognized. What sort of secrets was she protecting for her friend? And what sort of secrets did Nehemia herself keep that had caused the king to have her watched? The fact that he didn't know anything about it, about how much the king knew, enraged him to no end. And then there was the other question. Who had threatened the princess's life? He'd ordered more guards to look after her, but so far there had been no sign of anyone wanting to harm her.
"How do you know about her parents?" he asked.
"Some things you hear with your ears, others you hear with your heart." He looked away from the intensity in her eyes.
"When is she coming back?"
Nehemia returned to the book in front of her. It looked like it was filled with strange symbols, vaguely familiar markings that tickled at his memory. "She said she won't be back until after nightfall. If I were to guess, I'd say she didn't want to spend one moment of daylight in this city, especially in this castle. In the home of the man whose soldiers had probably butchered her family." Kaol took the morning training run alone. He ran through the mist-shrouded game park until his very bones were exhausted. In the misty foothills above Rifthold, Selena strode between the trees of the small forest, barely more than a sliver of darkness winding through the woods. She had been walking since before dawn, letting Fleetfoot follow as she would. Today, even the forest seemed silent. Good. Today was not a day for the sounds of life. Today was for the hollow wind rustling branches, for the rushing of a half-frozen river, for the crunch of snow under her boots. On this day last year, she'd known what she had to do, had seen every step with such brutal clarity that it had been easy when the time came. She'd once told Dorian and Kaol that she'd snapped that day in the salt mines of Endovir. But it was a lie. Snapped implied too human a feeling, nothing like the cold, hopeless rage that had taken hold and shut everything down when she'd awoken from the dream of the stag and the ravine. She found a large boulder nestled between the bumps and hollows,
and sank down on its smooth, ice-cold top, Fleetfoot soon sitting beside her. Wrapping her arms around the dog, Selena looked out into the still forest and remembered the day she'd unleashed herself upon Endovir. Selena panted through her bared teeth as she yanked the pickaxe out of the overseer's stomach. The man gurgled blood, clutching at his gut as he looked to the slaves in supplication. But one glance from Selena, one flash of eyes that showed she had gone beyond the edge, kept the slaves at bay. She merely smiled down at the overseer as she swung the axe into his face. His blood sprayed her legs. The slaves still stayed far away when she brought down the axe upon the shackles that bound her ankles to the rest of them. She didn't offer to free them, and they didn't ask. They knew how useless it would be. The woman at the end of the chain gang was unconscious. Her back poured blood, split open by the iron-tipped whip of the dead overseer. She would die by tomorrow if her wounds were not treated. Even if they were, she'd probably die from infection. Endovir amused itself like that. Selena turned from the woman. She had work to do, and four overseers had to pay a debt before she was done. She stalked from the mine shaft, pickaxe dangling from her hand. The two guards at the end of the tunnel were dead before they realized what was happening. Blood soaked her clothes and her bare arms, and Selena wiped it from her face as she stormed down to the chamber where she knew the four overseers worked. She had marked their faces the day they dragged that young Eelway woman behind the building, marked every detail about them as they used her, then slit her throat from ear to ear. Selena could have taken the swords from the fallen guards, but for these four men, it had to be the axe. She wanted them to know what Endovir felt like. She reached the entrance to their section of the mines. The first two overseers died when she heaved the axe into their necks, slashing back and forth between them. Their slaves screamed, backing against the walls as she raged past them. When she reached the other two overseers, she let them see her, let them try to draw their blades. She knew it wasn't the weapon in her hands that made them stupid with panic, but rather her eyes. Eyes that told them they had been tricked these past few months, that cutting her hair and whipping her hadn't been enough, that she had been baiting them into forgetting that Otterlin's assassin was in their midst. But she had not forgotten a second of pain, nor what she had seen them do to the others, to that young woman from Eelway who had begged to gods who did not save her. The men died too quickly, but Selena had one more task to complete before she would meet her end. She prowled back up the main tunnel that led out of the mines. Guards foolishly came rushing out of tunnel mouths to meet her. She surged upward, hacking and swinging. Two more guards went down, and she took up their swords, leaving the axe behind. The slaves didn't cheer as their oppressors fell. They just watched in silence, understanding. This was not a fight for escape. The light of the surface made her blink, but she was ready. Her eyes having to adjust to the sun would be her greatest weakness. That was why she had waited until the softer light of afternoon. Twilight would have been better, but that time of day was too heavily guarded, and there were too many slaves about then that could be caught in the crossfire. This last hour of full daylight, when the warm sun lulled many to sleep, was when the sentries went lax on watch before the evening inspection. The three sentries at the entrance to the mines didn't know what was happening below. Everyone was always screaming in Endovir. Everyone sounded the same when they died. And the three sentries screamed just like the others. And then she was running, sprinting for the death that beckoned to her, making for the towering stone wall at the other end of the compound. Arrows whizzed past, and she zigzagged. They wouldn't kill her by order of the king. An arrow through the shoulder or leg, maybe. But she'd make them reconsider their orders once the carnage was too massive to ignore. Other sentries came rushing from everywhere, and her blades were a song of steel fury as she cut through them. Silence settled over Endovir. She took a gash in her leg, deep, but not deep enough to cut the tendon. They still wanted her able to work, but she wouldn't work. Not again. Not for them.
When the body count was high enough, they'd have no choice but to put that arrow through her throat. But then she neared the gate, and the arrow stopped. She started laughing when she found herself surrounded by 40 guards, and laughed even more when they called for irons. She was laughing when she lashed out one last time, one final attempt to touch the wall. 4 more went down in her wake. She was still laughing when the world went black and her fingers hit the rocky ground, barely an inch away from the wall. Kaol stood from his seat at her foyer table as the door quietly opened. The outside hall was dark. The lights burned out. Most of the castle asleep and tucked into their beds. He'd heard the clock chime midnight some time ago, but he knew it wasn't exhaustion weighing down Selena's shoulders when she slipped into her rooms. Her eyes were purple beneath, her face wan, lips colorless. Fleetfoot rushed to him, tail wagging, and licked him a few times on the hand before she trotted into the bedroom, leaving them alone. Selena glanced once at him, her turquoise and gold eyes weary and haunted, and began unfastening her cloak as she walked past him into the bedroom. Wordlessly, he followed her, if only because she hadn't had a hint of warning or reproach in her expression, rather a bleakness that suggested she wouldn't have cared if she'd found the King of Otterlin himself in her rooms. She removed her coat, and then her boots, leaving them wherever she happened to discard them. He looked away as she unbuttoned her tunic and walked into the dressing room. A moment later, she walked back out, wearing a nightgown that was far more modest than her usual lacy attire. Fleetfoot had already hopped into bed, sprawling against the pillows. Kaol swallowed hard. He should have given her privacy instead of waiting here. If she'd wanted him to be here, she would have written him a note. Selena stopped before the dim fireplace and used the poker to stir the coals before tossing another 2 logs on. She stared down at the flames. Her back was still to him when she spoke. If you're trying to figure out what to say to me, don't bother. There's nothing that can be said or done. Then let me keep you company. If she realized how much he knew, she didn't care to ask how. I don't want company. Want and need are different things. Nehemia probably should have been here, another child of a conquered kingdom. But he didn't want Nehemia to be the one she turned to. And despite his loyalty to the king, he couldn't turn away from her. Not today. So you're just going to stay here all night? She flicked her eyes to the couch between them. I've slept in worse places. I think my experience with worse places is a lot more horrible than yours. Again, that twisting in his gut. But then she looked through the open bedroom door to the foyer table, and her brows rose. Is that chocolate cake? I thought you might need some. Need, not want? A ghost of a smile was on her lips, and he almost sagged in relief as he said, For you, I'd say that chocolate cake is most definitely a need. She crossed from the fireplace to where he stood, stopping a hand's breadth away and staring up at him. Some of the color had returned to her face. He should step back, put more distance between them. But instead, he found himself reaching for her, a hand slipping around her waist and the other twining itself through her hair as he held her tightly to him. His heart thundered through him so hard he knew she could feel it. After a second, her arms came up around him, her fingers digging into his back in a way that made him realize how close they stood. He shoved that feeling down, even as the silken texture of her hair against his fingers made him want to bury his face in it, and the smell of her, laced with mist and night, had him grazing his nose against her neck. There were other kinds of comfort that he could give her than mere words, and if she needed that kind of distraction, he shoved down that thought too, swallowing it until he nearly choked on it. Her fingers were moving down his back, still digging into his muscles with a fierce kind of possession. If she kept touching him like that, his control was going to slip completely. And then she pulled back, just far enough to look up at him again. Still so close, their breath mingled. He found himself gauging the distance between their lips, his eyes flicking between her mouth and her eyes, the hand he had entwined in her hair stilling. Desire roared through him, burning down every defense he'd put up,
erasing every line he'd convinced himself he had to maintain.